Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour on this Friday, the 20th of November on the West Coast, and on the East Coast, it's now the 21st, and also in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those who are listening to us on Wind Talkers Radio Network, especially those in the U.S. military, all throughout Japan, through Russia, Australia, New Zealand, Central and South America, all across the United States and Canada, and wherever else you may be hiding. Let's not forget Hawaii. We've had a lot of folks listening to us when I have Drew Raines on the show. Of course, many of you know he is a former U.S. Marine from 1967 through 1977, and we had a dynamite show last night. I can only compliment the work that he's doing, and I'm fortunate to have made many friends around the world as a result of being on his show and having him on Evident Footprints. I'm broadcasting from a remote location tonight, not my normal studio location. In fact, I'm at Huggy's Coffee Bar in Vermilion, Ohio, and this is the most out-of-sight coffee shop you have ever seen in your life. They won the Best Coffee Shop in Northeast Ohio award last year. Not sure of the votes this time around, but they were in the lead the last time I checked, and they're competing against some pretty big places throughout North Central Ohio. What makes them unique is the number of flavors they have of various drinks that they serve, and if you like a smoothie, they have around 150 different flavors. If you like coffee, they have 151 different flavors. No, I'm just kidding. They've got some really, really great coffee. I can tell you that. Day or night, it's some of the best coffee. Tom Hugg, who is the proprietor, wanted me to bring my show here, wanted the folks in our area to actually see how a radio show is produced. And he's very happy that I'm here, and I'm very happy to be here. And so we're going to have Tom on the show in a little while. Tom is fixing up the Christmas decorations. I haven't seen his Thanksgiving turkey yet, but I'm sure that'll be on the way. Been getting tons of email from folks regarding my latest article, the one Fort Hoodwinked. And I have to thank many, many people around the world for their kind words. I actually received a lot of mail from Muslim people, not just in the United States, from the Middle East, complimenting my stance on what our government is doing over there in the Middle East and my take on this shooting that occurred in Fort Hood, Texas. On the 5th of November. And although I wrote an abbreviated article for the Idaho Observer, I've got a lot more research that will be coming out. So stay tuned for that, as I mentioned at the bottom of the article. There's a lot of research to come out. Now, I got an interesting email from one of our listeners, David. And David's a musician, and he knows I'm a musician. And musicians tend to appreciate musical jokes occasionally. This particular story is pretty funny, and what's funny about it is it's actually happens all the time in professional music venues. The story sort of goes like this: right before a gig, the band leader calls the female singer over to him, and he tells her, okay, tonight, when we do Night and Day, I want you to sing the second verse first, and then break into the bridge one bar earlier than usual. Transpose the bridge up a minor third, but then back down again for the last three bars. Then add a 5/4 bar, going back into the first chorus, singing only on offbeats. During the sax solo, go to the bridge a bar and a half too early, interrupting the solo. Finish the first verse, go to the coda a bar late, and then keep singing for a full three beats after the band's finished. Her eyes got really wide, and then she said, that's way too hard. I can't do that. He said, you did it last night. So anyway, hopefully you musicians out there understood that. That's a great thing. So you guys like that, huh? All right. Thanks to David in Washington State. Okay, we want to clarify that. He's not in the District of Criminals. Now, my guest tonight is a regular Friday night guest ever since I started Evident Footprints 2.5 years ago. In fact, on Thanksgiving, that's going to be my second year anniversary here on BBS Radio, and I'll never forget the day I started because it actually became the morning of my birthday. So I get to sort of celebrate Thanksgiving and my birthday back to back this year. Jim has been with us for 2.5 years, and he is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer and teacher par excellence. He's also my co-host and our resident science advisor, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's always good to be with you. I enjoyed your little remark there about the District of Criminals.
Oh, you did? You didn't like the joke, though, huh?
Well, I never thought of it quite that way, but it is appropriate.
No, I meant the one about the singer.
Oh, well, that was interesting also, simply because of the fact that, you know, sometimes when you call attention to something that someone's already doing, it can confuse them, you know, when you put it in different terms. So I thought it was interesting, even though I'm not a musician.
Yeah. Well, if for anyone who's not a musician, what the joke describes is basically what a lot of singers do, especially in Las Vegas, it seems like, in the lounges. So it's an inside joke. I'm sure the musicians got it. We don't need to dwell on it. Jim, I mentioned this article. Would you believe that today I've gotten something like 12 or 13,000 hits on my website for this article on Fort Hood?
Well, I have read it myself, and I find it very intriguing. As I mentioned to you, the reaction that I had was I wanted to know way more. And despite that, I can definitely see how people would really be interested in finding out what really happened. One of the things that I've noticed, Don, and maybe you can concur with this, is I think a lot of people are starting to realize that the garbage they're being spoon-fed on TV and on the radio, normal radio, that is just not cutting it anymore. And when incidents like this occur and they get a whitewashing, I think they're beginning to realize that that's what it is. And now they're hunting for the truth, and that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I've got to tell you that out of the email I got, I didn't get one piece of negative email from anybody. I got a lot of communications from former military, people in the Navy, the Air Force, Army, Marines, Coast Guard, and they know that this stuff goes on. I got one particular email that was really alluding to the fact that I had hit the nail on the head or hit the bullseye. With this piece, and granted, it is abbreviated by necessity, but I'll have something a bit larger on the site because there are a lot of facts that support all the things that I've described. And, you know, of course, people are wondering, how did you arrive at this and how did you arrive at that? Trust me, the facts will come out. And they're going to have a hard time lying about it like they have been. They don't. It doesn't seem to bother them to lie about it, but they do. That's the media. That's their job.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible that you actually have an entire organization supposedly dedicated to transmitting the truth, and they're doing exactly the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gets confusing sometimes because you can't really tell which is the government and which is the media on that basis, right? Well, Jim, I don't know how much you like coffee, but I've got a cup of the greatest coffee that you can find on the planet at this place where I am. And it's a place for kids, too. You know how there's all these candies and food, specialty foods that we grew up finding after school. They have all of those things. They've got artwork. They've got antiques. They've got really, really hard to find items, novelty items. And Tom Hug, the proprietor, even does custom picture framing. And it's really, really a neat place. So if you're looking for any great Christmas gifts for your loved ones, you should consider Huggies. And I have a sponsor page on my website just so people know how to get in touch and order things. They ship anywhere in the world. They'll even ship to Mars, actually.
Well, that's convenient.
So, let's see now. On the last show, actually, the past five or six shows, we've been talking about hidden technology and hidden artifacts, archaeological expeditions, and the suppression of this information from the general populace. And we've tried to relate this. I think we've done a good job at it, actually. But our attempt is to relate the impact this has on consciousness. And, man, we've talked about reptilians and grays and giants and all kinds of things. And I know we didn't have the opportunity to breeze through that wonderful outline that you had worked out to sort of keep us on a path, but we allowed for a little bit of improvisation to go into some tangential type stuff. So I want to give you the opportunity to continue with that. Listeners have been finding it extremely interesting.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because actually it's one of my favorite subjects, if you will, even though there isn't a particular name for this type of field, unless you want to refer to it as a Fortean pursuit in honor of Charles Fort, who was one of the first people who started to record and write about various anomalies in history, various happenings in the world that weren't carried, you know, to the general public, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a very interesting field, and the reason why, as you know, we're relating it to the subject of consciousness is because we were looking for and have been talking about various ways that people can attempt to expand their consciousness. And part of that has to do with being aware. And the more things that you are aware of, the broader your scope becomes, and the more you start to see interconnections between things that may elude the uninformed individual. And this is the reason why we are talking about all these very obscure and unusual things, is to give people an idea of just how big and complex the world really is and allow them to contemplate on some of these things, some of which are actually mysteries even today. So that was the intent of the show, and of several shows. And I think where we left off last week actually was at the very bottom of my original list. there were two or three things that we didn't cover, which I will get into promptly. But before I do that, Don, I just wanted to go off on a tangent of my own. It isn't really a tangent. It's very related. It's just not one of the items that I had on my original agenda. And I've been talking to people on my own, too, about this subject of consciousness and what it really means and different levels of awareness and how you can know when you leave one level and arrive at another and things of that sort. And I was trying to give examples of what this is like in experiences that people may be aware of, at least to some extent, and that they can relate to. And one of the things that struck me was, years ago when I used to compete in martial arts, there's a perfect example embedded in that subject of what a higher consciousness or a broader sense of awareness is all about. Now, when two people pair off in a sparring match, I guess the general understanding of that by people who are observing but not participating is that, you know, you just basically try to beat each other up and somebody comes out on top. And in order to do this, you use all sorts of, you know, moves and combinations and blocks and punches and stuff like that, which they've learned over the years, and it looks very impressive. And a lot of people are interested in it. But the real thing that I wanted to bring out is something that you can only appreciate if you've actually done it. And that is that sometimes when you're in the midst of a competition and you realize your mind is, for all intents and purposes, turned off. And what I mean by that is you're not thinking, gee, what's he going to do next? You know, I'm going to block, I'm going to punch, I'm going to kick, I'm going to do this or that. You are just totally aware, or you try to be totally aware, so that you anticipate the next move and counter that move. And I have actually been in positions where I have blocked kicks and punches that I never saw. I just knew they were there. And that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. It's a knowledge, which is absolutely true and viable, but it comes to you through a medium that's different from your normal senses. And you just have a knowing. And that's one good example of a higher form of consciousness. Along that same line, and a little bit more practical perhaps, is something that Colonel Fawcett once said when he was in South America and setting up his theodolite to take a position reading of where he was somewhere in the wilderness. And he was standing on a rock adjusting his instruments, and all of a sudden he jumped into the air. And just as he did that, this very vicious snake called the Bushmaster had lunged at him and would have probably struck him, but he jumped out of the way. And the interesting thing is, he never saw the snake. And as he said, I didn't know the snake was there, but the inner man knew the snake was there. So these are the kind of things that that we're talking about, and these are levels of awareness that can be attained through various means. And with that little diversion or digression, I will be happy to now return to the original outline, unless you have a comment, Don.
Well, I have just two brief comments. Number one, you said that when people are doing martial arts, they don't think of anything. I see a lot of people walking around the planet that aren't thinking of anything, but they're not necessarily doing martial arts at the same time. Sort of just a dichotomous viewpoint of that. And I had a thought when you were talking about the sparring. I understand what you're talking about. You go into this zone where you perceive the motion that's about to occur before it actually even happens. And so you find yourself defending something without really seeing it, but you anticipate it almost out of habit, or even beyond habit, just it's an automatic response on another level. I often thought of martial arts and boxing as a competition of touching, where you touch your opponent until they're unable to touch you anymore. So that's my comment. You can go on now.
Well, okay, that's fine. I mean, there's a lot of truth in what you're saying, by the way, because, you know, one of the things that you learn to detect quite early in martial arts, even if it is only boxing, is a thing called telegraphing. And that is that you notice a motion or a flinch or a stance or something which transmits to you the intention of the other individual, and you're ready for it when he actually executes the move. Well, one of the things that's interesting is when you get to a certain level of expertise, and I'm not there, don't take it the wrong way, but the telegraphing actually occurs on the next level of existence, so that you start to detect stresses, strains, and accumulations of chi in your opponent. And so, you know, you're essentially, your energy field starts measuring his energy field. Now you're on one level above the physical. And that gives you a few milliseconds sometimes of telegraphing, if you're that sensitive of an individual, before the physical body actually has a chance to manifest the move. And so it's a very complex situation. As a matter of fact, while we're on that subject, a lot of different types of martial arts training has been known throughout the centuries to enhance spiritual development. One of them is Tai Chi. You know, if you do Tai Chi religiously, and no pun intended, regularly, it has a tendency to elevate your consciousness and your spirituality. And there are many different benefits aside from just being in physical shape. So anyway.
I'm glad you clarified what you meant by religiously. Could you see Jimmy Swaggart doing Tai Chi with Ernest Angley or any of the TV evangelists, I guess? Okay, well,
no.
Jim, you don't have to answer that.
I'm very glad.
Okay, continue. I'll turn the mic over to you so you can continue on your dissertation.
Okay, well, we had left off in the normal roster of things with the Chachapoyan civilization that was discovered by Jean Savoy down in South America. And maybe a good place to start would just be to recap and say that he had discovered a civilization built by a white race. And there, he personally had found 10 different cities in an area where there weren't supposed to be any such cities. And one of them is actually larger than Manhattan in its total area. And that's an extraordinary thing. And, of course, it's going to take archaeologists 100 years to excavate that whole area and understand what all is involved in that particular civilization. But the point that we tried to make when I introduced this, I believe it was last week, is the fact that this gentleman, who is an amateur archaeologist who hails from the United States and who unfortunately passed away last year, is honored as a hero in Peru for having made these discoveries totally on his own, unassisted, by any organization like National Geographic or anything like that. And yet in the States, you never hear a word of any of this. You know, it's amazing. I mean, here, how can you overlook the discovery of that magnitude? I mean, it's just amazing. And it's not like it isn't there. It's been verified now by thousands, but you don't hear a peep about it here, except through his own organization, who's still trying to promote his accomplishments. But that's a perfect example of something that certainly should be mind-blowing, and instead, it's just quietly ignored.
Oh, we're getting hints now that Barack Obama is planning on making a major announcement to the world that there's life from other planets traveling around our planet and throughout our solar system, something we've been saying for years. But no, the long-legged Mac Daddy has to say it, and then everybody jumps. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, that not to get you off topic, per se, but just to underscore the point.
What do you mean not to get me off topic? That's exactly what it's doing. well, anyway, no, I think that would be an interesting thing if they actually admitted to that. But I would immediately be suspicious, because anything that they do always has a slant in some direction that they have predetermined will benefit them rather than us. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they mention that and put it on the news and get everybody all excited, then that would be followed up by a phony invasion.
Well, I think they'd probably announce it on Oprah Winfrey's show, and then she'd give away 200 flying saucers. People would have to pay the taxes on half of it, and they'd want to give them back or something. Anyway, I'm just underscoring the point that you made, that so many things are hidden from the people without any common sense explanation for doing so. I'm backing you up. So continue.
Okay. Well, so the next thing I wanted to touch on is an area that I find really interesting also, and naturally it's associated with South America. Patagonia is a pretty remote and mysterious part of South America, as you probably know. And there are lots of reports that a prehistoric animal, which is called Megalophelia, otherwise known as a giant ground sloth, may still be alive in Patagonia. Not fur, but skin from this beast has been found in caves, and also non-fossilized remains, which seem to hint at the fact that that it's still roaming around down there. And there have been numerous sightings of this thing. And incidentally, it's quite huge. I mean, it's like 14 feet high when it stands on its hind legs. So it's at least as large as a Kodiak bear. And one of the interesting things about it is it has a very huge, thick tail, which it uses like a kangaroo to balance on its hind legs or its haunches. And it can reach up and grab branches and stuff from trees and pull them down when he's in that position. They have huge claws, so it wouldn't be a very good idea to tangle with one of these things. And they are armored. And the armoring in this beast is very different from what you might expect. There are lumps of bone which float around in the skin or just under the skin, but they're not attached to anything. They're just like little islands, and they act to discourage anything from taking a bite out of this creature. Plus, I understand they don't smell very good. But anyway, that's another point of interest. You know, the idea that there can be and probably are remnants from the past age still in existence on Earth. They just happen to be frequenting areas where modern man doesn't go. That doesn't mean they're not there.
Can you name some specific places where people have seen those, or has anyone been able to take a photograph or capture
them? Well, that I don't know, but I would certainly, I'll tell you what, if anybody out there wants to fund an expedition, I'll be first to go. But there have been, I'll tell you where there have been some interesting photographs, and recently, not of the ground sloth of Patagonia, though. In several of the islands that are offshore in the chain that is identified as the Philippines, there have been sightings of pterodactyl-like creatures. And the natives are fully aware that they're there. They steal sheep and other small animals and occasionally children. And the missionaries that go there have apparently taken photographs of these things. I know a guy who has personally seen one. And there's another gentleman who died 2 years ago, but luckily I got the interview on tape myself and, well, actually, you know the other guy, Don. Randy and I interviewed this fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And he described being on an island during World War II, where he would see these huge leather-winged creatures. Actually, they nested up on the cliffs above this big lake or swamp, and they would come down and actually lie on the water with their wings stretched out. And when they were in that position, when you first saw them, you'd mistake them for some kind of a big turtle, because their backs had a kind of a hump when they were in that position. But then if you fired a gun or something and they go to take off, they would literally push off the surface of the water with their wings, and then they begin to flap and they'd fly up. And we showed this guy photographs or renderings. They weren't really photographs. We showed them renderings of all the different known types of pterodons that we could find pictures of. And he picked out two that seemed to fill the bill for what he had seen. And I don't remember the names of them because, you know, they're all different. But nonetheless, they were not the standard pterodactyl that you see in, you know, sci-fi movies and that type of thing, but they were in the pterodon family. They didn't have the big bony crest on the back of the head, but they did have a long beak and with teeth in it and a short tail. And when they flew, their legs dangled behind them in the air. And he was very positive about making that identification. And then, of course, there are all the stories we talked about previously, which we don't necessarily have to bring up again, but Ivan Sanderson was attacked by a creature of that sort when he was in Africa. And there've been lots of different sightings of creatures which supposedly are extinct, and yet people see them all the time. So
now, Jim, were you planning on talking about the creature called the chupacabra? Have you read about that or heard much about it?
Is this the thing from Mexico?
Well, it's been seen in Mexico. I know of a group of people in the northwest end of Arkansas and maybe even the southeast part of Missouri, as well as parts of Texas, Louisiana, Puerto Rico. They've seen quite a few of them, and they've been described as anywhere from 3 to even 5 feet tall. And these things are vicious.
Yeah, I have heard of this this creature. I don't know what it is or what it's supposed to be, but I understand it kills and eats cattle and other other domestic animals.
Yeah, and usually they went after goats, which is where the name chupacabra came from. Mm-hmm. They called it the goat sucker, and they would. These farmers would find their goats were sort of damaged a little bit, and they've actually attacked people too.
Yeah, I actually don't have very much information on it. I have read about it. I don't profess to know, you know, what it's supposed to be or where it, comes from.
It's of ET origin, I would say.
Well, that's very possible.
Has that appearance from some of the drawings I've seen. You know, maybe, you know, if it's just a fantasy of an artist, maybe he was the chupacabra. It's hard to say. But I thought I'd mention that because you're on the edge, you know, of that particular topic with some of the descriptions you're giving. Certainly.
Well, the interesting thing about what I do recall from the articles, which seem to negate the possibility of it being a total fantasy, in areas that are widely separated, the sketches that have come out are almost the same or very, very similar. And that's kind of unusual for a fabrication, you know. But what I was always hoping was that they'd nail one of these things so that they'd have positive proof. You know, one of the things that that seems to be a common thread running through all these experiences which border on the mystical is the fact that if you don't have one or some absolutely solid proof, the entire incident gets turned around and you become vilified, and the rest of the world uses your lack of proof as a lever to disqualify you from having anything of substance.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you, don't you think that's because of a dependency of habitually gauging what exists on what you see? You know, imagery?
I was just going to say that I think that that's an unfortunate human trait because, you know, I understand the scientific principle very well, and I realize that that's something that we use to steer a course through this incredibly complex world we're in. But on the other hand, if it's taken to extremes, it can also lead to a very, very prejudicial point of view when it comes to the expansion of knowledge. And I personally have run into that, you know, in my own field, where, you know, if you say anything that's outside the normal understanding of science, you just get clobbered, unless you happen to have a whole bunch of proof on hand. So,
yeah, I recall you telling me once about giving a physicist, I think it was, a demonstration of your Dynaflux generator, and he was going to make up a report or something on what he had observed, and you're waiting, 18 years, I think you said, for that report?
Oh, yeah, well, that was a very a prominent individual, too. He was from, I won't mention the name of the school, but it was a very prominent university, and we had received a grant from the Ben Franklin Institute to build one of these units. So this was way back in the 70s or 80s. I guess it was the 80s. And so one of the criteria for having received this grant money was that we had to work hand in hand with a scientist of the foundation's choosing. So they picked the head electrical engineer of this very prestigious school, and we worked with the guy, and I showed him all the designs and everything, and he was very interested and very compliant right up until the time we turned it on, and then at that point, naturally, he was going to supervise the entire test procedure, you know. And we had instruments that were certified right back to NBA and all kinds of stuff. And he had arranged for all of that so that there'd be no doubt about the authenticity of the measurements. And he had a clipboard where he was writing down all the results of what we were doing. And he had a little calculator. And every once in a while, he'd run a spot check on the numbers. So we were about halfway through the procedure, and he turned to me and he says, is very, very strange. He says, this machine puts out more power than it takes to run it. And I said, yeah, I know. That's the whole reason you're here. Oh, says he, well, you know, that's impossible. That can't happen. So it must be doing something else. So I said, okay, what's it doing? He said, I'll get back to you on that. And that was somewhere like around 1988 or 86 or whatever it was. I haven't heard from him yet, but we're still waiting. I think that's the incident you were referring to.
Yeah, I was. That's just a perfect example of what you've been describing, where they take something quite obvious and try to debunk it by just ignoring it or making some ridiculous comment about it. And I'm getting a message here. Hang on a second. Well, I'll allow you to continue. What are you trying
to
say?
Well, the interesting thing about a lot of this stuff is that there has been such an overemphasis placed on the importance of conservation of energy that it actually now stands in the way of making any progress. I believe personally, after 42 years of independent research, that energy will always be conserved. But that doesn't necessarily tell you anything. Because there are situations where, for instance, you have a certain amount of energy at your disposal, but you can do more work than you would normally expect to do with it. And in a fixed amount of time, and this constitutes a change in power, not a change in energy. So there is a possibility of systems that are very nonlinear, where the power output is greater than the power input, and energy is still conserved. And this is the type of thing that Tesla was talking about for years, back in his lifetime. It's over 100 years ago. And it's still ignored. It's still looked upon as being absolutely impossible. So, you know,
now that's as far as letting the public know what's going on is what you mean to say, right? Because we know certainly that the private labs or the government labs, the secret underground bases, and the off-planet labs are using all of his technology, or at least experimenting with it, trying to learn to use it.
Yeah, it would be interesting to find out how much they really know and how far they've actually gone with that. But I look at it this way. An open-minded, a hand-picked group of open-minded individuals with the proper background in science and technology that have almost infinite funding at their disposal, if they can't discover new realms of science to investigate, then it's hopeless. Because I do know that private individuals like myself have come across things of this nature, have funded it themselves and dedicated their life to pursuing it, and that they have made very big headway. So if one individual can do it, you know, just by sheer willpower and sacrificing, you know, over the years to the point where you'd rather see a scientific result than eat or pay your rent or something, then certainly these so-called think tank groups that are funded by, you know, to the tune of hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars must have come up with something.
Yeah. You know, what's amazing to me is all the things you're talking about. And one of the companies that developed a very high form of technology that's used to tunnel the underground bases, I'm sure you know where I'm going with this, the RAND Corporation, had an expert on mainstream radio yesterday, and I caught this 30-second or one-minute clip of this representative from the RAND Corporation telling us how we have to really watch what we're doing here because the terrorists are now infiltrating our military bases, something to that effect. And I thought, what a bunch of hogwash, you know. I'd already done my research and written this article, and this guy is out there just putting propaganda out for the mainstream and the dumbed-down public. And if you ask any person on the street, who is the RAND Corporation, do you think you're going to find one person in 100 that knows who they are? On the average, you're not even going to find one in 100. I can tell you that. And yet they bring these people in front of us like we're supposed to listen to them, like they're God's angels or something, delivering messages that somehow didn't make it into the Bible.
Well, the irony of it is that there's a guy making a statement like that about we have to be so careful because we're being infiltrated by terrorists. Why doesn't he mention the fact that our own president and the two presidents that preceded him are giving away our military and technological secrets at a rate that's unprecedented, simply because they don't have the cash to pay our bills or to pay their bills. They're not really our bills. The bills run up by the U.S. corporation. You know, that's a much more pertinent and interesting fact, considering that all that information was exposed and developed by the sweat of the American people through the money that was taken from them through taxes and other forms of theft. So, you know, that's what he should be focusing on.
Well, since you made that segue for a moment, There's a person here. There is a person here. You better come here. You're on live on the radio. There's a person here. Just step around here. You come around here and stand here with me for a second. I just want you to say hi to Jim. Jim, there's a person here that has tremendous respect for your work and is actually telling people about the miraculous things you've done with technology and how interested she is in getting your technology into our community. And for the listeners out there, I don't know many mayors anywhere in this country that have left their city with a surplus. And she's actually created, she inherited a negative bank account, and it's in the positive, it's in the black, in the millions. And her name is Jean Anderson, our illustrious mayor. I want her to just say hello to you.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jean. How are you? It's a pleasure to meet you.
Likewise. It's a thrill for me. I would really like to meet you actually in person and talk about some of the research that you have done and what might be available.
Well, there's nothing from preventing us to make that kind of an arrangement. I just need a little lead time is all. And I'm sure Don can put you in touch with me privately anytime you want.
Yes. Yeah. That's not a problem.
I'd be happy to come and meet you.
Because, you know, in as far as energy is concerned and, you know, the technology that we could put in place, I think it's pretty exciting to think of what you might have available for us and know that we certainly need it.
Well, I've been pursuing this for a very large number of years, and it hasn't been an easy course, but we're almost to the point where we have some really exciting news to discuss. I'm hoping that maybe next year will be the year. And in the meantime, however, if you choose, I'm happy to come there and discuss possibilities with you. It would be a pleasure to meet you, ma'am.
Well, also, you know, we have Lake Erie right out our back or front door, however you look at it. And we'd like to think about how we could use that as well.
Yeah, Don had mentioned that, and, you know, it's interesting because I'm in touch with an awful lot of people that are doing unusual types of research, and there's a group I'm aware of that's on the East Coast that's very interested in using the thermal gradients of water to produce electrical power. And I'm already contemplating an alliance with them with respect to my own technology. And then there's also something else that might interest you is the possibility of making use of Brown's gas, which has been completely ignored in this country except by the amateurs. And that's a very fascinating field of endeavor, which has almost unlimited possibilities. And the interesting thing is other countries grab up that stuff and run with it, and the United States is still telling everybody how it's impossible, it doesn't exist, you can't do anything with it. People that I know of in the Mongolian Metals Institute have already used Brown's gas to create something like a 2,000% increase in available energy on the output. Now, whether or not they can do this on a continual basis or not, I don't know, because unfortunately I'm not privileged to all of their information. But I understand the principle, and I've worked with it. And the interesting thing is there's just so much that could be done if we had the willpower to do it and if we had the money to fund it. And when I see the waste that's going on and the billions and billions of dollars that are being paid, you know, to, I won't even mention to whom, you already know, it's just sickening, because the main thing that we really need to preserve our culture is a new form of power that's reliable, inexpensive, and not based on fossil fuels. And that's where the emphasis should be placed, not on all this mumbo-jumbo that's really designed to undermine the country.
Amen.
Well, Mayor Anderson, Mayor Gene Anderson, want to thank you very much. Come on, folks, let's hear it for the mayor. All right. Jim, I got to tell you, this lady is head and shoulders above any political figure I've met in the country, and she's not really a large person, but she's not only helped the community out tremendously, she's outside the box. She understands what the matrix is, and she's outside of it. So she's the perfect person to implement something like what you've developed. And speaking of which, if I can take a moment and play something, this is uncanny how this is all synchronizing together. I've got a short little message that Maxine Waters brought up during the Inquisition of one of our elitists from Shell Oil Company when they were speaking before Congress in a hearing. And Ms. Waters gets caught making the statement that most liberals would dread that anyone would let slip out. And I want to play this if I have your permission, Jim.
Of course you do. It's your show.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure. All right. This is Maxine Waters here. Take it just a moment.
What guarantees are you going to give this liberal about how that will reduce the cost of gasoline at the pump if we let you drill where you say you want to drill?
I can guarantee to the American people, because of the inaction of the United States Congress, ever increasing prices unless the demand comes down, and the $5 will look like a very low price in the years to come if we are prohibited from finding new reserves, new opportunities to increase supplies.
And guess what this liberal will be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing, would be about basically taking over and the government running all of your companies.
Now, I'm going to narrate this just for a moment here. She wants to socialize our country. Yeah, this is a script in the video. The liberal secret desire comes out with a slip of the tongue. Now, Jim, you know I'm apolitical, okay? I don't lean to the left and I don't lean to the right unless I'm doing the tango. And I'm going to go on and read the next little portion of this. Remember that the Democrats won control of the House and Senate with the 2006 elections. Of course, in 2008, they went on a little bit more. And the price of gasoline at that time was about $2.17 a gallon. And if the Democrats get what they want, America will change even more dramatically. And you've got to hear what she says one more time. What's interesting...
And guess what this liberal would be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing... would be about basically taking over and the government running all of your companies.
Now, you should see the folks sitting there with her smirking and laughing and covering their mouths. Totally in shock that that slipped out. What do you think?
Well, I mean... You have to be blind not to know what they have in mind. You know, this takes us right back to the main theme of what we've been trying to talk about. Awareness, a raising of the consciousness. I mean, how difficult is it to see what the intention is? You know, all you have to do is follow the history of our country, even just for the last 15 years, and you can see it clearly. But, there again, you know, if you're not focused on it, you're not going to notice it.
Do you suppose that if Barack Obama got caught on the highway, stopped by a police officer or highway patrolman, and he couldn't produce a driver's license, what do you think would happen to him?
Well, I don't know, because it's a very difficult... It depends on the situation. I mean, what would really be interesting is if he was driving alone and violated the law, and he wasn't necessarily recognized, he might actually wind up being profiled. That would be interesting.
Oh, yes. Well, I didn't mean to take you off topic there. I had thought of this issue when you were talking about them hiding all of these really important things, and I thought, yeah, they've... And you said it brings us up to today. They're doing the same thing. And that's true with his certificate of live birth. We haven't seen it. They haven't yet organized that archaeological dig to go looking for it, have they?
No, not that I know of. But, you know, I want to backtrack just for a second on something that you brought up, because it was really worthwhile, even if you didn't realize it.
Well, go ahead.
The Rand Corporation... that makes these super diggers that they use to make these underground bases and whatnot. And I haven't seen one of these, although I have seen pictures of the actual cutting blade, that the drill bit, or whatever you want to call the thing on the front. It's enormous, as you probably know. But what I've read about them suggests that they're nuclear-powered, and that the rock and pulverized material that is ground up as the tunnel is pushed forward actually gets sucked into the machine, exposed to enormous amounts of heat from the reactor, and then literally turned into a liquid, which is then deposited on the tunnel wall as a glass glaze that seals the tunnel and makes it impervious to water and other things of that sort. And if this is true, it's very interesting, because where it leads us, you talk about going through a portal to the past. One of the biggest mysteries that has never really been solved is the amazing huge subterranean tunnel system that exists in various parts of the world, most particularly under Brazil. And these tunnels are, God only knows how old, but they have the same t- type of a finish on the walls that looked like something just melted its way through there. And some people who have explored these tunnels say that a lot of the cities are actually connected underground by means of these subterranean routes. But most interesting, in my opinion, is that a large number of them angle out and disappear under the Atlantic. And it would be very, very interesting to know where they used to go. But there's a mystery that if we understood it, who knows what it would do? Who knows how it would change the world? And yet nobody seems to take an active interest in solving that type of mystery.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought this point up, because if you consider consciousness and its multidimensionality, right here on the Earth, I mean, they say, and I hear this from Dr. Richard Souter, who's been on this show, and some of the other metaphysicians and people who have been in the military, they all describe their knowledge of underground bases. We learned recently in August that we have an underground base under Lake Erie. We had an event on August 25th where they chemtrailed the skies at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the whole state of Ohio was covered with chemtrails, and there was an altercation going on in space, and they didn't want us to see it. And these jets that were appearing nonstop, it seemed to be out of nowhere, had to have been coming from that underground base underneath Lake Erie. And it's purported that every major city in this country has an underground area the size of the city, at least. And you're right, they're connected with tunnels. And they do go to the mountainous regions. They don't dig these tunnels and build these underground bases to turn them into casinos. The one in West Virginia that became a casino was found out, so they couldn't use it. Everybody knew it was there. And the one that's getting attention now is the one in Blacksburg, the one they say is in Butt Mountain, as they call it, B-U-T-T. What a name they gave that place. I guess the top of the mountain is called Butt Head, actually. to use a pun. I don't make the names, Jim. I just read them. but you're absolutely correct about that. And that RAND machine, you know, this company, this military industrial complex giant that is dictating protocol to politicians in Washington and elsewhere, appears regularly on C-SPAN or on National Public Radio or PBS on TV, and they just parade these guys in front of us, and nobody's supposed to question who they are. But yes, they developed the nuclear powered tunnel boring machine that has the Air Force logo on it, which is another dichotomy, because they're digging the tunnels in the ground. What the heck does the Air Force have to do with that? Well, they actually have underground bases for planes, too, in many areas, especially on the west, or southwest of the United States. So it all ties together.
Well, the reason I brought it up, in response to you mentioning it, is because even though these tunnels that you're talking about are fairly recent, the ones in Brazil are at least 7,500 years old, possibly 10,000 or more years old. And the fact that they're using the same, approximately the same technology, I mean, at least the results are the same, that you have this tunnel with a glazed wall that goes on for miles and miles underground, is pretty extraordinary. And it makes you wonder if it's a coincidence in technology that's demanded by necessity, or if it's a carryover from ancient times by somebody who knew how it was done once before, or could it even be that that those ancient areas have been privately investigated and technologies or remnants of technologies found which allow them to do what they're doing now? It's something that's worth puzzling about.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. And just to expand just a little bit on what I was saying in relation to what you said, you know, this multi-consciousness thing is in the ground, and it's on the surface, and it is in the air, and it is in space. And yet they want us to focus all our attention right here on the surface, don't they? They don't want us to consider what might be in the ground. They've made that their domain. Everything that comes out of the ground, they own, you know, whether it's oil or all the minerals that they get, gold, diamonds, and everything in between. They control all of that. And we're supposed to labor up here so we can further their goals underneath and up above. It's kind of dichotomous. It's like they have all the answers, but to tell you the truth, on the plane where they expect us to exist, they're doing a pretty lousy job. Where they consider our reality to be and their own projected reality is pretty pathetic. Any comment on that?
Well, the only thing that I wonder about when I think along those lines, Don, is, you know, they have children of their own, and they're living here, same as we, and so how is it possible that they expect to escape, you know, the result of all of this negative activity, which is affecting the Earth as a whole? We're all going to be subject to the negative ramifications of these endeavors. Now, maybe they feel that when the time is right, they can get into some kind of a fancy spaceship and scoot to Mars until things quiet down. But I don't know if that's their goal or not. But you know, the planet is suffering, and the people upon it are suffering. And, of course, this brings us back to, you know, conversations we've had previously concerning the fact that this Earth is a conscious entity. It's a conscious being. And I don't care how many tunnels they dig. I don't care what all they try to do to prepare. If Mother Earth decides she's had enough, watch out. I've said that a million times, and it's still true. You know, they just don't have any concept of the power and the incredible swiftness with which it can be brought to bear if this planet decides to cleanse itself of the human virus.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything about there's a guy named Andrew Basiago who has been predicted to be the guy that's going to tell the world that there's life on Mars, that when he was a child, they teleported him up there via one of the jump gates that they like to call it, or they call them wormholes. Technically, you and I would probably just call it a dimensional portal. He claims he was up there for a number of years. They took him up there as a young boy, and he's going to be the one to announce to the world that there's life on Mars, that there's a civilization up there, that there are buildings up there, there's air, there's water, there's greenery. And you've heard me say that for many, many years, haven't you? I've been absolutely convinced that there's life on Mars, and I've got pictures on my website of the life on Mars. But they're making this official announcement that is supposed to come out, and this guy we're supposed to believe because they show us a picture of the Civil War, and they put him in a time machine, and he got into this picture. Now, we're supposed to, go into the past. Remember how I always say they pull our consciousness into the past to keep us unaware of the everlasting present or the ever-expanding now? They don't want us to move into the future. They always keep bouncing our consciousness back to memories of the past. And I'm going to be pretty critical about this because there is already proof that they're up on Mars. There's a multinational contingent up on Mars. Multinational. You've got Russians up there. You've got Chinese up there. Certainly United States is up there. And I know the Germans are there. And it's the same issue on the moon. They're not telling us what's going on, really. So we're telling people. So instead of waiting for Barack Obama to come out and tell you this, I'm telling you. Jim, you can chime in too.
Well, we've discussed this on many shows, and not only that, Don, but actually the interesting thing about Mars, and I've been interested in Mars ever since I was a young boy, you know, the thing that's puzzling to me is very, very good telescopic images of Mars were taken and reduced to film throughout the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. And I can remember I used to love to go to the souvenir shop at the Hayden Planetarium in New York City, affiliated with the Museum of Natural History, before they turned it into an absolute abortion with this so-called modernization effort. But they had the most glorious pictures of Mars, and they were in color. And I still have some of them in my files back in New Jersey. And you could see so clearly the white ice caps on the top and bottom, the so-called red desert areas, and then these huge patches of green, and the green would always come down in these strange spidery shapes and join up with other green areas, and that was the whole, I don't know what you want to call it, impetus or reason why people assumed that they were canals, because these areas were all interconnected in a pattern that looked, you know, so designed. And then all of a sudden, probably in the 60s, all of a sudden you stop seeing those images. And the new face of Mars was shown as this planet that looked very much like the moon. No coloration, no detail, you know, just this desolate-looking area. And then, of course, when the robots started going up and sending pictures back, all of this was supposedly confirmed. Well, how is it that all of a sudden we can't take pictures of Mars and get those amazing colored areas that seem to indicate vegetation and the bright red sands of the desert areas, and all of these interconnecting structures, whatever they may be? All of a sudden, they're just gone. And the funny thing about it is, you don't hear anybody say anything. You know, it's like, what happened to all that old science? You know, was it a mistake? Was the original stuff just, you know, concocted? Or is the new stuff concocted? They can't both be right.
Yeah, I agree. Now, a lot of what we see in these photographs is airbrushed out. I mean, this planet is no more red than you are chartreuse, Jim. Okay? And I've seen you, so. You know, it's just a mind game. Everything is a mind game with these people. And that brings us back to Fort Hood, doesn't it?
It could bring us back to Fort Hood.
but you're not going to let it.
Well, I was just hoping that I might be able to cover at least four different topics,
yeah.
You know.
Go ahead.
If you want to go to Fort Hood, that's okay.
No, I don't want to go there. I didn't enlist in the Army, and I don't want to go there. So go ahead. I spent a week there writing about it.
Well, here's one for you that I think is very interesting. In New Delhi, India, in a small square, which is like in a very old part of town, there's a 12-foot column embedded in a stone foundation, which has been standing there at least 1,000 years. It's made of iron, and it never rusts. Now, this has been written about by countless numbers of people who, you know, actually went there and looked at it, photographed it, took samples of it, had it analyzed. You know, why is it that something that obvious and the possible industrial and commercial ramifications of understanding that has just never been looked at? You know, who had the technology, you know, all those years ago to create the darn thing in the first place? You know, isn't that worthy of consideration? Isn't that something that we should be pondering upon?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Sure.
See, the problem is that the average individual is so caught up in the artificial life that we're forced to live that they actually think it's normal. You know, they work from
Dancing with the Stars and
yeah, I mean, all these things that we're exposed to, they just take for granted that this is what life is all about. And for some reason, once you're in that boat, it's very hard to get out of it. It seems like your whole stream of consciousness is predetermined and directed by the people who are the choreographers of our lives. And it's only when you break out of that mold that you start looking around and saying, man, there's all kinds of mysteries here. There's all kinds of wonderful things that we should know about. Let's pursue some of these things. Here's another one for you. I think we covered this on another show, but I'm going to mention it anyway. Back in the 1890s, when the Colorado River was being explored, there was a gentleman, and forgive me, I don't remember his name, but this is on the internet. You can find it yourself. He was coming down the river with a small expedition trying to discover as much as he could about the nature of the Grand Canyon and the other surrounding areas. And they saw way up on one of the cliffs what looked like an artificial portal. And so they pulled their boats over onto a sandbar and climbed up. And they found a huge underground temple that they claim looked very, very much like it was Egyptian. So this is right in, you know, in our backyard. It was either in Colorado or one of the states that Arizona or Colorado, one of the two states that they found this thing in. And So they wanted to come back and explore it because it was quite extensive. It had a lot of underground rooms and galleries, and you know, they went in there and made makeshift torches to make sure that the thing really went in to some extent, and it wasn't just some kind of a surface illusion. And sure enough, it was a very big place. Well, the interesting thing is this got written up in a lot of newspapers as a demonstration of the fact that some ancient civilization, possibly Egypt, had an outpost here in the United States, and it was in the Grand Canyon. And this made all kinds of commotion at the time. And then what do you suppose happened? Well, the government moved in, sealed off the thing with a great big steel door, put power and light in the place, so that they could investigate it on their own. And they now have a perimeter around that whole area on the north part of the Grand Canyon where it's actually prohibited for you to go there. Yeah, and you can be arrested or shot. Now, why would they go through all that trouble for nothing? I remember 2 years ago I gave a lecture in a little town in Arizona, and we got talking about this very thing with the locals out there. And they said, oh, that's still going on. They said there was a small group of bicyclists that were exploring the North Rim just recently, and they were all arrested. You're not allowed to be in this area. Now, why would that be, you know? What in the world is the reason for suppressing that information? So, I mean, okay, they were Atlanteans, they were Lemurians, they were Egyptians. What of it? Why is that such a big deal?
Yeah.
You know, unless they're afraid to allow people's consciousness to, you know, expand along these lines.
Yeah.
Or unless they made discoveries in there that are so profound that they're afraid to reveal them.
Well, Jim, number one, we've got a caller. I hate to interrupt you. We've got a caller on hold here, but we've also got Huggies owner Tom Hugg here, and I want to give him a chance to bring some consciousness to people about what they can get their hands on. The government can hide stuff from us, but Tom's making it available to anybody in the world. All they have to do is get in touch. Tom, meet Jim Murray and say hello to the listeners.
Hey, Jim, how you doing? Welcome to Vermilion and to Huggies. How are you tonight?
Thank you, Tom. I'm well, thank you. And you, sir?
I'm real good. I'm having a lot of fun here tonight. It's the first time we've done this, and I'm really enjoying it. I've known Don for a long time, and this has been very educational to me. Where are you? Don was just saying you're in Oklahoma City?
That's where I'm living at the moment, yeah. I've been here about 6 years.
Okay. And maybe someday you'll come to Vermilion?
I don't see why not. I've already been extended an invitation just tonight.
Yeah, it's a really great place. It is a really, it's a very special town.
Well, I'd love to see it, and I'd love to meet all of you. And just so you know, I really love good coffee. So,
well, we can help you there.
Don and I will show up. And
you've got an open invitation here anytime you wish, sir.
Well, thank you so much. Don and I will come down and hoist a few cups of your good coffee.
Yeah, Don's become a regular here and a great friend of Huggies and certainly the city of Vermilion. So we feel, you know, very lucky to have him here. And Don and I both, we didn't really know it, but we both, until we met and started talking, but we both grew up in Lorain, which is kind of like the next big city over. So we have family and friends, and or they're mutual. So it's been a real joy.
What's interesting, Jim, is Tom's father was a school teacher, and my mother was in his junior high class. Imagine that.
Well, that's an interesting coincidence.
Yeah.
How old is your...
My mom is 80, and your father is 96, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, my dad, Jim, is 96. He's down the street here, and I just actually came back from seeing him. That's why Don's kind of been running the show here in more than a few ways. So Don's mom was a student of my dad's back in the, 30s.
Yeah.
1930s.
Well, God bless you that your dad has lived so long. I hope he's in good health. And
yeah, he's in good health. He's got a couple things going on, but on the whole, he's doing great. And, you know, Don and I certainly are both very blessed.
Well, be sure to give him my best. And maybe when I come down there, I can get to meet him, too.
Yeah, well, I was just actually talking to our honorable mayor, and she speaks very highly of you, too, and some of your ideas. So someday, hopefully, we can all get together here.
That would be an absolute pleasure, Tom. I appreciate the offer.
Okay. I'm going to put Don back on the whatever this thing is.
That's called a microphone.
Contraption. It was nice meeting you, Jim.
Tom Hugg, thank you very much. Let's hear for Tom making this possible. Tom is a great guy. And I got to tell folks, if you want to order something, I'm going to give you the phone number for Huggies. It's area code 440-967-7575. Again, area code 440-967-7575. 7575. You've got to call. If you are getting ready to buy somebody something for their birthday or for a holiday, for Christmas, for New Year's, for whatever, just to make up because you had a lover's quarrel or because you want to let somebody know that you care about them and you haven't even expressed that yet. This is the place to do that. Go to directlightproductions.com, click on sponsors, look for Huggies Coffee Bar, and go to town. They ship anywhere in the world, and it's fantastic. Now, Jim, thank you for letting me put in that little commercial there. We've got Rodney in South Carolina, been holding very patiently. Rodney, are you with us? Well, it sounds like we lost Rodney. Are you still with us, Jim?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Okay. Seth, is Rodney there? Or maybe Rodney couldn't hold any longer.
Hello?
Oh, there he is. Rodney, welcome to the show.
Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear us? I guess Rodney's not hearing us. So we'll keep talking.
Well, maybe I can hear him.
Yeah, we can hear him, but for some reason he's not hearing us. So
I can hear you.
Oh, you can hear us. Okay. How are you, Rodney?
I'm doing fine.
Okay. Question or comment for Jim Murray?
These are comments first. First of all, since you're there in Vermilion, make sure you have some Lake Erie perch.
Oh, I know. This is the walleye capital of the world, by the way. No?
That was the next one.
Yeah.
I grew up there, so I know.
Oh, wow. In Vermilion?
Not in Vermilion, Cuyahoga County.
Okay. You're east a little bit.
Yes.
Whereabouts in Cuyahoga County?
Right outside Hopkins Airport.
Parma?
Yes.
Parma. They used to say it on TV. Goulardi used to go, Parma.
Or AMRAP.
Yeah, AMRAP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, underground bases. There is an entire underground city under Lake Erie. And there is one totally under Cleveland, totally under Cuyahoga County that I'm aware of. How far out it goes, I don't know. I know it went past Strongsville. There's all kinds of things up there. There's, if you go over by the airport, you will see the old Cleveland Tank Plant, which is now the IX Center. I don't know what they call it now. I haven't been there in years. That thing goes down I don't know how many levels. I was in parts of it. There's a whole side of that hill that opens up onto the river in the Metro Parks, and there's a door over there. They don't want this out.
Mm-hmm.
I was an outside contractor when I was very young, and as a guest, I was in NASA. I've been in the wind tunnels, and I've been down below.
Mm-hmm.
It'll blow your mind. I'm only saying what I know I can get away with saying.
Yeah.
There is stuff that goes all the way out under Lorain County. There is stuff that goes all the way out east, almost all the way to Ashtabula. They'll tell you it doesn't. I'm telling you it does.
Now, how far do you say into Lorain County does it go?
Oh, I got to think, Don, that's many years ago. I think it goes almost to the city of Lorain.
But wouldn't surprise me. It probably goes to Black River someplace, at least.
It probably does. I'd have to pull up old maps and stuff and really sit down with a friend of mine and... Uh-huh. I wish I would have kept all that stuff now that I didn't know how important it was back when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this goes even back to when they had the old story of the black helicopters. There was tons of them following all the rivers up there, disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
God rest a man's soul that all of a sudden had an illness and it killed him. He was a wildlife photographer, and he used to go down to the metro parks,
uh-huh.
the mouth of Rocky River. And he's sitting down there doing his deer, and next thing you know, here comes a whole bunch of them helicopters, and you could see the spinning cannons off the side of them, and you could see where they were loaded. I saw his pictures because he had developed his own pictures. He zoomed in on them. They didn't like it.
Hmm. Now, did you ever come across anything with the Amherst Quarry, by any chance?
I'd heard stuff about it, but I don't have anything that I can actually prove it.
Mm-hmm.
There is some stuff that it goes, since you brought up quarries, there's some stuff that went on in Berea quarries.
Okay. For the listeners, that's the west side of Cleveland.
Yeah, they'd be in the town of Berea, in the Berea quarries. They used to call it Wallace Lake, I think,
mm-hmm.
back in the 60s. I know there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes under, and it's connected also in with the salt mines, because, you see, the salt mines, and there was a thing called Whiskey Island, and those salt mines go way up under Lake Erie for
mm-hmm.
miles.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
To my knowledge, I was told by an electrician on a local 38 that he just kind of puffed on his pipe and kind of would only tell me certain things, and he says, if I knew half of what was under there, he said, I wouldn't sleep nights.
Hmm.
And he was the electrician that did all the lighting under there. And they were sworn to secrecy. He, on occasion, would leave things out for me to find, so to speak. But here's another little tidbit. In the bottom of Lake Superior, there is a UFO. To my knowledge, I have not allowed them to ring it up yet. It's still laying there.
Isn't there a World War II plane down there with it, too, that plane had actually chased that UFO and was shot down?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I would believe the best person to get the details from that, I think, would be Linda Moulton Howell. But I remember them talking about it. Now, for those of you that can think back in all them years, and I'm showing my age, I used to have the privilege of going to a beach, and that would be east of Cleveland.
Euclid and Beach?
No, farther than that.
Astorville?
All the way. I was out on, it was almost into, it would be called Saybrook Township, Ashtabula, Ohio.
Ashtabula, I said that. Okay.
Okay, and I missed that, but I had the privilege of going there when I was very young. And God, I wish I could have those days back right now.
Hmm.
We were laying there on the beach when we were very, very, very young. Of course, we didn't have light pollution like we do now. We obviously didn't have chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
And we're laying on the beach and enjoying ourselves, and at that time, you could actually see satellites floating. They'd go in a straight line. You'd see them orbiting. And we're laying there, and all of a sudden, I looked at my friend, and he said, did you see that? And I said, yeah, I was going to ask you the same thing. He said, what was it? And I said, well, I know what a falling star is. I know what a satellite is. I said, and there is no planes I'm aware of that can do what we just saw. So you know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
A UFO.
Yeah.
We talked to his mom and a couple of the other ones, and they smiled and said, yes, we see him out here all the time. They said, enjoy the summer, and best keep your mouth shut, because they'll think you're nuts. As I got older, I don't remember the man's name. I can get a hold of somebody, and I can find out who he is. He lived in Seven Hills, Ohio, for years.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he was monitored for years, including his mail. In fact, a man couldn't go to the bathroom without them bugging him. I met him. Sorry, Don, I can't remember his name at the moment. I went out to the Seven Hills area, and he showed us how to find him and see him. And he exposed them back then. That's in the 60s and early 70s.
Yeah, I recall that time when I'd seen my first one in 66. And
well,
so did a lot of other people.
My parents were very generous and bought me a telescope, and I've actually been able to see the craters on the moon. You know how the winters are up there,
mm-hmm.
how clear they used to be.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised what I saw with that telescope.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we didn't have any camera equipment like we do now, but oh boy.
Yeah. Rodney, let me give Jim an opportunity to comment on what you're saying, if you would.
Well,
yes.
I concur with some of the things that Ron is saying. I spent a lot of years living up in northern Michigan, and the skies up there are exceptionally clear, and especially in the winter. And we used to see UFOs regularly. And the local folks said you can tell them from the stars because you can actually, if you watch them, you can actually see the little lights on them flashing. They're similar to, like, airplane lights.
Yes.
And some of them just have synchronous orbits where they just sit up there, and you wonder what the heck they're doing.
Yes.
But I've also seen them in motion. So it's quite a thing, and they've been around for God only knows how long.
Yes, Jim, I saw every bit of that.
Yeah, well, I was in a very remote area up there, and, of course, the locals are a little bit superstitious, but I worked for Bethlehem Steel in the mining division, and I got to be pretty good friends with a number of guys, you know, from that area. And they had a haul road on the quarry that I worked in that was about 6 miles or 4 miles, something like that, in length. And they used to haul the shot rock from the quarry all the way into the crushing plant along that haul road. And I know several guys who were working the third shift who told me that machines came right down and hovered over their trucks and followed them for a good length of that 3 or 4 miles. And that must have been an interesting experience for them. But there's all kinds of things going on the general public never hears about, and that's for sure.
There was a time, it was in the early 70s, I was going up Interstate 71 back towards Cleveland because I was visiting somebody in Akron. And I don't have, and I cannot recollect, 4 hours of my time to this day. It got really foggy. I was driving. I don't know what happened. I went into a trance. Next thing I knew, I woke up, and I'm going back down the road. And, I mean, I look down, and I see the clock and the dash of the car. And, I mean, I was sweating bullets. I opened up the windows. It was in the winter, and it scared me that bad. That's all I remember.
I had an experience just like that today, and I found myself here doing a radio show. So don't feel bad.
Well, this was a real one. This one,
so
Donna,
was mine.
I'm being polite. You can imagine I was what I was saying, and I'm by myself, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning. It's like, what is going on?
I have a quick question for you. Without putting yourself at any risk, what do you think is the purpose of all this underground nonsense that's going on in the area you described?
That's not the only area that is going on. It is going on totally under California. It's going on a majority, and I can't prove it. I had a magazine that showed those big grinders that you were talking about earlier, how they were building tunnels and stuff under the ground. And back in the middle 80s, I had a copy of that and all the details of it, and I didn't think to keep it. I've been told there's an underground bases that where the submarines off of California go up underneath it. Somebody told me, I don't remember where I heard it, that Jacques Cousteau, the father, actually went under there and looked at a whole bunch of it because they wanted his opinion. And all his remark was, is the world is not ready for this yet. And that was back, I believe, in the 60s. I don't know if his son has followed up on it. Jim, I don't know. They tell us so many lies. There's a woman, and she is a psychic. And I can't remember her name. She shows up on Montel Williams. If I hear it, I can tell you.
Sylvia Brown.
Thank you. I know her reputation. I can't prove it myself, but I do know I have personally seen the shadow people. I know what I can see the thing every so often move. I have since I was a child. They're nothing to scare me once you know they're around. It's like, okay, hi. Sylvia Brown says that they've been here for thousands of years. And when she was doing the Montel Williams show, she says, in fact, there's three of them in this room and I will not point them out. I wouldn't be a bit surprised because there's so many things that all of a sudden happen. Now, there is a man that I met years ago that was in the Area 51. And his answer to us and our questions was, all this modern technology, all you see, he says, all of a sudden somebody discovered it. And he always had that southern laugh from Alabama, and he said, don't kid yourself. He said, they didn't just discover it. He said, we've been making trade with them for years. He said, they don't want you to know about it.
The one that I believe fully.
The one thing he did tell us, that he says, in time, the truth will all come out.
Yeah, well, the thing that I've heard along the grapevine that lends support to what you just said is that they've been trading human beings for technology because they have no regard for us and treat us as a commodity. And they've been doing medical experiments and genetic experiments at our expense in return for all kinds of technological innovations which have slowly crept into the matrix.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
That I can back you up on.
Yeah, so nothing is surprising in that regard. There was a guy who wrote a book. He was a military man, and he wrote a book that explicitly defined several technologies that came to us by that route. And one of them was microchip. I forget what some of the other ones were, something to do with automation and a few other things. And he wrote a book about it after he retired from the military. And that book wasn't on the market more than a month before he had a sudden heart attack and died. And then they took it out of print.
Of course, they don't want the truth out. Remember Arafat, how he all of a sudden got sick and died?
Mm-hmm.
That's no coincidence.
Oh, well, I knew a guy back in New Jersey who had worked for RCA Corporation during the war as an electrical engineer, and he told me that during World War II they had perfected a means of using microwaves to induce a heart attack in a person, you know, 15, 20 feet away, and he described the whole process. And if they could do that back then, only God knows what they can do now.
Well, do you think it was Arafat who died, or maybe his clone?
I don't know. I don't have that answer. All I know is all of a sudden he disappeared and somebody let it out that says, yeah, well, that was another assisted suicide.
Yeah, well, anymore it gets a little difficult. I guess it doesn't really matter if it's the real person or the clone, does it? Because they interchange them at will anyway.
Yes, unfortunately, I'm believing that. I don't know if it was your show, Don, or somebody else's here, but somebody said something about they have the ability to do the cloning, and it's a lot worse than what we ever know. The technology of what I was told, in other words, if I say it the correct way, the technology we are seeing right now is a technology that they had back in the early 70s, 71, 72. That's what we have now, so you can only imagine what they have beyond us.
Yeah, it really goes back to the 50s, and they were certainly looking at this in the 1920s. You know, they made a special announcement that they were able to remove the nucleus of an egg and transfer it to another one and grow a being. So they've been doing this for a long time.
If they have this type of power, I do not understand, because they cannot be human like us, I do not understand why they do not change it and clean all this mess up. I mean, money, What is money? If you cannot do something positive with it, it's worthless. If you die, you can't take it with you.
Yeah, well, you're dealing with beings that are void of any spirit, you know, anything meaningful as far as spirituality. They may like to think they're spiritual, but they're not. And so, you know, they exist in an artificial and technological existence, moving from one end of time to the other, but never actually landing anywhere on solid ground, if you know what I mean.
Well, maybe it's time for them to be omitted.
Very parasitical in nature. Rodney, we're going to have to close the show out, but I want to thank you and give Jim a chance to respond to what you said. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, sir, and thank you for allowing me to join your program, and God bless you both, and you both have a good weekend, and don't forget to have some of that good food.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye, sir.
Thanks for calling in, Rodney. Jim, any comment before we end the show?
Well, I enjoyed Rodney's comments, and it's nice of him to take the trouble and the risk, you know, of relaying some of the things that he knows. One of the things I would like to comment on, though, before we go, is, his closing remarks were interesting because they are, again, he's obviously a decent, down-to-earth person that's trying to understand this thing from his perspective. And one of the things that concerns me is that when you get puzzling over why these individuals do the things that they do, and they seem so counterproductive from the normal standpoint, it could very well be that what's on the agenda is a form of terraforming where they want to convert the Earth to something else which is not suitable for humans. I mean, they're always talking about killing off 2/3 of the population of the Earth, and you know, there's a lot of innocuous things that go on. We already know that. We have the technology and have had it for many years to have a practical electric car. They're still adhering to the gas guzzler. Now, I understand that part of that is for monetary reasons, but another thing is that every vehicle on the road that's spewing out those hydrocarbon exhaust fumes is changing our planet. And we could actually be participating in this terraforming effort without even realizing it. Now, I'm not saying that that's what's happening, but there again, it's something to consider. It's another point of view. And the real question is, if it's being changed, then who is it going to be suitable for when the job is done? That's something you really want to think about.
Well, yeah, it seems that they're setting it up for themselves. In fact, a lot of the pollution that goes on, I think, is mirrored by what people have described seeing underground. When I recall the talks that Phil Schneider gave in 1995, and I think in a short time in 96, he described a stench beyond description in these underground bases and these underground tunnel systems. So it isn't a place that you'd necessarily want to visit anyway. But certainly we have a right to know what the reality is on this planet. You know, we were given the permission to come here and live along with whomever was here before us. You know, if you're going to tell us that we're the only beings in the whole world, then this game shouldn't be going on. That's going on. It doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, think of it that way. You know, if we're the only intelligent beings in the whole universe, then why is it this place so messed up? Why is it so messed up by those that tell us these things and those that like to run it and dominate it and enslave everything that moves? To me, they're not as slick as they think they are. Murderous, yes. Slick, no.
Yeah. Well, that opens the door for a whole new show in itself, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I steered you off of your outline. But, Jim, we're out of time, and we're going to have to call it a night here. But I want to give you a chance to wrap it up. Before I do, I want to wish you a very meaningful, happy Thanksgiving, whatever that means these days. We'd have to get the definition from the long-legged Mac Daddy, because I'm sure that if you don't celebrate Thanksgiving the way you're told, there'll be a fine and imprisonment down the road.
Yes, Thanksgiving must be politically correct from now on.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
Well, Don, thank you very much for having me on the show. I enjoy this unusual presentation tonight, and I'm very honored to have met your mayor. And I will talk to you in private about how we may follow up on her generous invitation. So we will talk off the air about that.
Okay, and you got to meet Tom Hugg. He's the honorary mayor in this town. He's got so many friends, this guy. And he's good people. He's somebody good to know.
He's well, when I come out there, you'll have to introduce me, and I'll shake his hand.
Yeah. You're going to have to get some stuff from him, too. I know it's right up your alley.
Well, good. I look forward to it.
Okay. Well, Jim, you have a closing remark, or was that it?
I guess that was it. I mean, if I make any other statement, we'll just loop around or something else, and, you know, we don't want to do that right now.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your contribution and enduring all these political speeches and all of that. You got to meet someone from the Java sugar complex, or should I say the Java industrial complex. Tom Hugg from Huggies Coffee Bar, the best place in all of Ohio. Forget about just Northeast Ohio, the whole state, and probably most of the country. It's a fabulous place, and I'm very thankful that they had us do the first show here. That's another benchmark that we set tonight, Jim. So I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and same to all our mutual friends that you run into. Tell them I gave a shout out. And let's extend a happy Thanksgiving to those in the United Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon, who are most likely listening to the show because you're on it, Jim. And we touched upon some topics that are very familiar with them, and wish that soon they will come here and this place will finally be on its feet and moving in the right direction. And I'm speaking about planet Earth. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Evident Footprints tonight, especially those listening on Wind Talkers Radio Network. All you folks in the U.S. military, come back soon and come back whole and safe. Our prayers are with you. Also, those listening in on blogtalkradio.com, special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, Rodney for his wonderful phone call tonight, and you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.